Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. It is Friday, time for the Week in Review, and we're just a couple of hours away from a major change on Beacon Hill.
Dear President Chandler, I hereby resign from my position as state senator from the Hampshire, Franklin, and Worcester District effective Friday, May 4th, 2018 at 5 p.m. Sincerely, Stan Rosenberg.
That's State Senator Stan Rosenberg's official resignation letter read aloud for reporters yesterday by a Beacon Hill clerk. Rosenberg's decision to step down follows a scathing ethics committee report released this week that found that he failed to protect Senate staffers from sexual and racial harassment by his husband, Brian Hefner.
Senator Rosenberg failed to protect the Senate from his husband, whom he knew was disruptive, volatile, and abusive.
Rosenberg's resignation was met with approval from several lawmakers, including Governor Charlie Baker.
I found the report that was done by the Senate Ethics Committee to be incredibly disturbing, and I called for the former Senate President to step down, and I'm glad that he did. I think he made the right decision.
But it was also met with shock felt by some of Rosenberg's own constituents, such as Northampton's Lena Fletcher.
You know, my understanding of the things that he's done during his career is that he's been an amazing politician for our town and our county and our state. It does feel like a shame.
So there's much to discuss with our Week in Review panel today, and joining us to do so is Tiziana Deering. She is a co-director of the Center for Social Innovation at Boston College and a member of WBUR's Executive Advisory Board. Hello, Tiziana.
Hello.
Also with us is Joe Battenfeld. He's a political columnist at the Boston Herald and host of Battenfeld on Boston Herald Radio. Joe, it's good to have you back.
Thanks, Megan. Thanks.
Let me just start with you. What do you make? Did Rosenberg make the right decision this week?
Yeah, obviously he made the only decision that he could. He was totally forced to do it. And I thought that it was interesting, the report, though, because while it did find, they said he didn't protect the institution of the Senate and the members of the Senate, the report found that he actually broke no Senate rules, mm-hmm. which I thought was interesting. And the report did not recommend that he be expelled. The report just recommended that he have his senior chairmanships be taken away from him. So there was nothing in the report that said, you know, you have to resign. It was pressure from people like Maura Healey, I think, calling for him to resign that caused him to do it.
Yeah. And also, in addition, the report did recommend that he basically have no leadership positions whatsoever,
right?
In the Senate committee or otherwise. Tiziana, let me just get your take here.
Well, it's interesting. I've been teaching some ethics cases in my classes in the last couple of weeks where we specifically frame it around when you are a steward of other people's interests and resources. How does that change your obligations and what's possible for you? And when that ethics report came out and essentially hamstrung him from any kind of leadership role, it really did underscore that he could not any longer be an effective steward on behalf of the needs and resources of the people he's elected to represent. And when that's the case, the right stewardship decision is to step aside and make room for somebody who's capable of greater efficacy.
Yeah. So I want to get to the fact that he officially didn't break any rules, as you said,
right.
Joe, in just a second. But there's a side point that I do think we should talk about briefly. And I'm going to play some tape here for it. This is Acting Senate President Harriet Chandler just yesterday speaking on behalf of the state Senate as a whole, apologizing to Brian Hefner's victims.
As members of this body, we want to say to victims, staff, and all those whose lives were affected, we are sorry for what you have been through. You deserved better. We must do better.
So, Joe, let me ask you about this, and I wanted to play that because really what this ethics report found, for me, its biggest takeaway was that even though for years Senator Rosenberg had been saying that there was this firewall, right, between the work that he was doing in the Senate and his husband, I mean, effectively, that report found that there really wasn't. I mean, he was sending emails claiming that he was Stan Rosenberg.
Right. And I think it's important, you know, that, you know, they give this apology, but at the same time, it was pretty widely known what Brian Hefner was doing, I believe, on Beacon Hill and in the Senate. And nobody stepped forward to do anything. Certainly Senator Rosenberg didn't step forward to do anything to get him under control. So I think this could have been prevented. It could have been stopped years ago if people had taken it more seriously.
Right. So that's exactly, I mean, yesterday, just before our show, I spoke with one of the victims, and that's what the victim actually told me. He said the takeaway that he takes from the report is, like, if Rosenberg had even done a little bit of what he could have to intercede between Hefner and his victims, that some people would not have been assaulted.
Yeah, so that's clear, right? And one of the things that strikes me about this is not only his failure to take even the small steps that could have had big outcomes in terms of avoiding getting to this point, but I also found it really curious, this discussion about his pledge of a firewall, because mm-hmm. I've thought about all the different professional situations I've been in my life and leaders I've been with. I've never heard anyone have to say before, I swear to God, I'll keep a firewall between my personal life and my work life, which makes me wonder what kind of heat or smoke everyone knew was already there if you had to make that kind of pledge in the first place. Now, I don't know, but I'm saying that's weird, right? The need to make that kind of pledge and then knowing that you're making that kind of pledge to completely fail to uphold it really is quite striking. Yeah.
Joe, so this is where my sleep-deprived memory is failing me, but didn't Brian Hefner, he had gotten in some kind of trouble before, which is why Rosenberg said that. Do you remember what it was?
Yeah, people were complaining about him.
Yeah.
And that was the issue. And so, like I said, they knew about this for years, that it was going on. It was pretty widely known in Rosenberg's office what was going on. His staffers knew what was going on, but, you know, nobody did anything officially. But it's also important to note, I think, that this report was actually completed 3 weeks ago, and they didn't release it until this week, and they released it conveniently after the filing deadline had already been passed. The day after to replace Rosenberg. So they prevented anyone from going in there. And initially, I think the feeling is they were trying to protect Rosenberg from any future. They wanted to, if the report came out and found that he did these things, that people would have come forward and run against him. But now it's too late. And there's one person who filed, and she's going to win.
Right. Yeah. So a Democratic primary challenger.
Right.
But now she's the only person left on the ballot. Go ahead, Tiziana.
Well, so, you know, I do think from that perspective, it was right for Harriet Chandler to apologize to his victims from the entire Senate. Because when something like this is going on, from we knew a long time ago, he had to make a pledge, lots of acts didn't happen, we waited 3 weeks. There is a systems level. A number of people had to make poor choices and or behave badly for us to get here. Now, that doesn't excuse Senator Rosenberg, but a number of people would have had to make bad choices or behave badly for us to get to this point.
It always is that way, right?
Yeah.
Because, I mean, there's a whole system built around anyone who has ascended to that level of power. Joe, before we move off the issue of Senator Rosenberg, you did mention that he didn't formally break any Senate rules, right? And that's the thing, right? There's a 69-page rule book, but only one rule on misconduct.
Right.
And so it seems as if maybe, I mean, we have some folks, Bruce Tarr, saying that maybe they need to take a look at that the next legislative session.
I think that's a wise thing to do, because if he broke no rules, then their rule book needs to be changed right now.
Yeah, because that's a lot of questionable action and no official rules broken.
Right.
All right. So let's move on to another major political story of the week. This takes us to the level of the race for governor of the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. And the story is that coming out of the Republican state convention this weekend in Worcester, Governor Charlie Baker is going to be facing a primary challenger, conservative Springfield pastor Scott Lively. Here is Lively at the Worcester convention declaring himself to be a true conservative.
They tell all the rest of us that a conservative can't win in Massachusetts. You know why they say that? They say that because they don't believe in real conservatism.
Lively is most commonly known, for those who do know him, for his extreme anti-gay rhetoric. In fact, his Springfield-based group is on the Southern Poverty Law Center's hate map. They've been tracking Lively's activities for some time. But nevertheless, Mary Lou Daxland, who's president of the Massachusetts Republican Assembly, voted for Lively at the Worcester Convention, and she says it's because she's frustrated with Charlie Baker, calling him basically a Democrat, and that she likes that Lively stands behind President Trump.
He said, I am 100% pro-Trump. That pulled some people over, saying Charlie Baker has done nothing but snub his nose at the sitting president.
Tiziana, you're up first.
And if we were electing a cheerleader for President Trump, that would be very helpful.
But that's what Mary Lou Daxland
wants. No, but we are, and that's a problem. Not from a political standpoint, I'd like to go to, we are electing the chief executive of the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. And in all of this kerfuffle around Scott Lively, one thing I have not heard is any discussion of his capability to run the Commonwealth of Massachusetts over and above everything else. Now, I have layers of concern, right, that run below that, over that, around that. But this is why we're putting somebody forth to challenge the chief executive of the state, because he likes the president better. You know, we've got budgets to run and trains to make run on time and biotech to attract and all kinds of things.
So to be fair to Mary Lou Daxland, I mean, I did have a long conversation with her yesterday. And absolutely, the Lively support of Trump is part of why she likes him. But really, her concern was with Charlie Baker, right? She kept saying that he's essentially a Democrat because he's such a centrist Republican. But my question to Mary Lou Daxland, Joe, was, okay, you know, if you're looking for a more conservative Republican in Massachusetts, fine. But was there anyone else other than Lively to fit that bill? And she said, no.
No, there was nobody actually running. So he was the only one. So in some way, he was a vehicle. I was at the convention. There's quite a bit of grumbling going on about Charlie Baker, how he's not a real Republican. And this was a Republican convention. I mean, Charlie Baker wouldn't even go out and shake the vice president's hand. He was so worried about being associated with the Trump administration. And it was a protest vote, essentially. Yeah. Not so much a vote for Scott Lively, but there was no other way for them to register their protest.
But it was 28%, right?
Yes.
That's well more than the 15% needed,
right, to
register that protest vote. That's the thing I'm wondering about. So ostensibly, a third of the delegates were like,
there was a lot of support for Trump in the convention hall. When some people mentioned his name, people would cheer. You could hear cheers coming up. It wasn't overwhelming support. Let me be clear about that. But there was certainly a large percentage, a substantial percentage of Republicans who support Trump in Massachusetts and don't like what Charlie Baker has done.
Yeah. So, because Lively is the person whose name is probably going to be on the ballot here, let's talk about him specifically a little bit more. I had an interesting conversation with him on Monday. It was very combative because I had asked him about he has a civil liability charge for battery against him in Oregon. In 1992, a jury did find him liable for battery on a 23-year-old freelance photographer. And it was interesting because at that time in 1992, he was one of the most strong voices and sponsors of a anti-gay rights ballot measure in Oregon. So he's got a long history on this. And I just wanted, in terms of his approach to the media, we're just going to play a little bit of a tape from that conversation where we're talking about the Oregon case.
Yeah, you really haven't seen, don't know much about Oregon, do you?
I actually grew up in Oregon. I lived there from
really?
The time I was
Where?
2 to the time Where? I was 23, in Corvallis, from? Oregon, in fact. And I know you
Corvallis,
spend a lot of time in Eugene, Oregon, so I know Multnomah County very well.
I would have pegged you as a Eugenie in a heartbeat.
Actually, I said Corvallis, sir. I said Corvallis.
But they border, and it's really the same ultra-leftist crowd. That's actually Antifa. Has its deep its roots in that exact area.
We went on and on and on. So Tiziana, this is the person, right? He is on the ballot. Just tell me more about what you think about that.
Well, so I'm just going to summarize the key points that came out of that interview for your listeners who might not have heard it. So about the civil case, I didn't do it and it was her fault anyway. Then about the Oregon courts, they are tantamount to a Soviet justice system.
Hang on. Let's just hear him say that.
When you are in a system that is as corrupt as Multnomah County, it's sort of like being under the Soviets. When the Soviets would find you guilty, there may have been, even in the Soviet Union, there were procedures that you could follow, you know, to sort of get an appeal. But everybody knew it was just is ridiculous to even try because the entire system was rigged.
Right. And so let's just finish then with the homosexual community, the gay community was responsible for the Nazis. So these were the key themes that came forward in your discussion Monday with the person who is in the Republican primary for governor of the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. And I think to some extent that those were the themes speaks volumes.
Joe?
And I think that gays are not the only group that he's gone after. He's gone after women, too. I encourage people, if you're ever considering voting for Scott Lively, to read, go on his website and read some of his rantings or writings. I'm sorry, about women's place in society and a men's place in society. There's pretty controversial stuff there. But I do think in a strange way also that Scott Lively may help Charlie Baker.
Yes, absolutely.
I think so, too. Charlie Baker is going to look very reasonable. Charlie Baker wants to look like a moderate. He wants to look like he needs to appeal to independent voters and Democrats. And if he's out there saying, I refuse to debate Scott Lively, I think he's going to get a lot of support.
Yeah. I mean, my last thought about the existence of Lively's candidacy now in Massachusetts, it just, to take it back to President Trump, it just shows before the presidential election, we had some GOP historians here who said that if Donald Trump wins the presidency, the GOP will officially become the party of Trump. It won't be the Republican Party anymore. And I think we're seeing the truth of that now, that here, even in supposedly, blue Massachusetts, a true Trumpian candidate is on the ballot, Tiziana.
Yeah, I was talking to somebody this week who said, why are you so surprised? After Roy Moore, after Joe Arpaio, right, after what we've seen beginning to emerge in elections around the country, the guy in West Virginia with the controversial language about Mitch McConnell's wife and business being of Chinese descent this week, right? If that's what we're seeing, how can it be so surprising to see a candidate like this show up here in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts as well?
Joe?
Yeah, and I think that, for Scott Lively, I think really he needs to show that he is a serious candidate. And if he really wants to run as a candidate, he's got to, answer questions about what his positions would be, what his policies would be, economic
policy. Whether he can run the Commonwealth of Massachusetts.
Well, exactly. he got mad at me for not asking those kinds of questions.
Okay,
so
but I do think that it's going to be interesting. Baker's going to face pressure to debate Lively. And I think it would be smart for Baker to say, I don't want to give a platform to Scott Lively's views. Obviously, political expediency, Charlie Baker, of course, does not want to appear on the same stage with Scott Lively, but I think he would get some support if he said, I don't want to give this guy a platform for his views.
All right. Well, we have between now and September to see what happens, right? Which was when the primaries are. So we've got just enough time for our hubbubs today. And Tiziana, why don't you start us off?
Well, speaking of sharing the stage with somebody unlikely, I just got the biggest teehee this week about finding out that Senator Elizabeth Warren tweeted a happy birthday to Dwayne Johnson or The Rock and turns out to be a big fan of him and his work, etc. I haven't had that Kool-Aid, right? It's not a big appeal to me. But in several levels, I just thought that was just a hoot, especially given the fact that he's not been shy about the fact that he's considering his own bid for the presidency in 2020, which just takes us to a whole new place. So I was surprised by that and got a bit of a kick out of it. Now, I will admit that there's been some rumor that if he ran, Tom Hanks would run as his VP, and I'm all over that. So I get it, but it was my hubbub for the week.
Oh, America.
I would love to ask Warren what her favorite rock movie is. She probably couldn't name one.
I have one. Moana.
There you go.
Yeah, because he was Maui. Voiced Maui. Moana. I thought he was really good.
I actually did too. He was pretty good.
He was excellent. Yeah. Okay, Joe.
I had to watch that movie about 100 times, by the way.
At first I was like, huh, but then, the hair, the water, it's fabulous. Yeah. Okay, Joe, you're hubbub.
For hubbubs, we're getting on the Trump theme. I think we're going to look to New Hampshire. If there was going to be a rebellion in the Republican Party against Donald Trump, it's going to be in New Hampshire, the first in the nation primary there. There was a poll that came out. Suffolk University did a poll, found surprising amount of support for Donald Trump within the Republican Party, just what we were talking about in Massachusetts, but even more so in New Hampshire. He would destroy Jeff Flake. He would destroy John Kasich in a primary, according to this poll. So there's really no threat from a conservative threat to Donald Trump or a moderate Republican threat to Donald Trump out there. It's going to be him on the ballot, I think, because if it's in New Hampshire, if this is being felt in New Hampshire, it's going to be around in the rest of the country too.
Yeah. Well, I love your hubbub. I'm also kind of semi in shock that we're already talking about the New Hampshire primary.
It's coming. The candidates are already there.
All right. Well, this is going to be a cop out, but my hubbub, actually, we're going to spend quite a bit of time talking about in the last part of the show because it has to do with the retirement of one of the best reporters in Boston who's been serving Boston for 50 years with his journalism. David Boeri is retiring from WBUR. Tiziana, you didn't know?
I didn't know.
Yeah. So David's going to come in the latter half of the show, and we're going to talk about his career. So everyone stay tuned for that because such a huge loss, but it's a well-earned retirement for David. So that is my hubbub. Stay tuned for more. Tiziana Dearing, co-director of the Center for Social Innovation at Boston College. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And Joe Battenfeld, political columnist at the Boston Herald and host of Battenfeld on Boston Herald Radio. Thank you.
Thank you, Meghna.
We'll be back. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.